Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe.
And I'm Ryan.
Today, Ryan and I discuss adaptations, which let's talk about what we mean by adaptations. We're a media podcast, so in this case, we're talking about when media takes an original thing and then remakes it again for something else. Most commonly, when books are turned into movies, or movies are turned into video games, or video games are turned into comic books, or any of that. So, I don't really think we have any medium shots to say. We'll just get right into the topic, get into a close-up. We're going to be talking about some examples of good adaptations, some examples of bad adaptations. What makes a good adaptation, what derails one. We'll just start with my belief on adaptations in general is that they're kind of inherently flawed, because every piece of media ever created is tailored to fit its medium's strengths and weaknesses. And artists who make these things, they intentionally choose the medium in which they're trying to make them. I make movies for a reason. We do this show as a podcast for a reason. People would make comic books for a reason, or make video games. It's the best way to tell their story. So changing the context of that story always is going to, you're going to lose something in translation. It's basically what it is. It's like taking a language and translating it. Yeah, you can in broad strokes say, yeah, this is what it means. This is the intention behind it. But when you translate word for word, it usually sounds stupid or nonsensical. So adaptations are always more about the intention than the literal meaning, than the literal word for wordness of a project. And that's the thing. You can't replicate one to one. It just doesn't work. Sometimes, however, new mediums aren't always for a loss. You can gain some things by them too, which we'll get into. But yeah, I think they're just inherently, you can't go in expecting the same. They have to be different by design when you move from one medium to another.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think just fundamentally, they're going to be flawed at the start, because you're going to have fans of whatever original content you're adapting from be very nitpicky and protective of the original content to begin with. And even the slightest change, whether it be negative or positive to the overarching story or characters of that, they are going to tear to pieces. So you always have to approach an adaptation with respect and not just do it for a cash grab, which a lot of adaptations still do anyway. It's always tough when you hear, oh, they're adapting this to live action, or they're going to do a TV show. And you're like, okay, it really works better as a book or a video game or a movie, but let's see where they go from here.
Speaking of nitpicky examples, one off the top of my head is one I often hear my mom complain about. And it does bug me too, but it's an example I've heard her off talk about when in perceivingly poor adaptations. She always talks about how much she dislikes Amy Adams' Lois Lane because she's a redhead. Got nothing to do with the character okay. Or anything. It's like, but Lois Lane is a brunette. She's been a brunette for 80 years, and then these movies just turn her into a redhead for no discernible reason. It's just, okay, they picked an actress and Why is she a red hat all of a sudden? That's not who Lois Lane's ever been. I, as a DC fan, tend to get more annoyed that they keep casting brunettes as Barry Allen, like, instead of a blonde guy. Like, it's even little nitpicky things like that.
I didn't realize your family were hair purists.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's a recurring thing. But even little things like that are, they get to some people. Like, why do the live-action versions of these characters not have the same hair? It's not right.
It's like they're doing a How to Train Your Dragon live action, and the actress for Hiccup's love interest isn't blonde, and you're like, what are you doing? She's supposed to look Scandinavian. Give her the blonde hair. Give her, what's her name? Whatever. Astrid. There we go. It all comes back to me.
Yeah. And sometimes those changes do matter. Sometimes changes like that can completely alter the context of a character. Like, hey, you didn't realize person who adapted, but those little details are actually very integral to who this person is. And sometimes it's just a hair color and it doesn't matter. Usually that's the case. But my prerogative is I try not to whine about changes in adaptations, especially when I'm reviewing things, because I find it a fool's game. It accomplishes literally nothing for me to say, well, I think this is a worse piece of art objectively because it wasn't like its source material. That's an awful way to judge anything. Why should I say, well, Avatar is top of mind right now because, well, that's the new big thing out right now is the time when we're recording. We just, last week's podcast, that's what we talked about. So why should I compare the new Avatar of Netflix to the old Avatar? I mean, you can, just as an exercise. But what does the quality of the one have to do with the other? Why should I dislike Netflix's adaptation just because it does stuff differently? Why can't I look at it on its own 2 feet and see if it's any good? I don't have to play the comparison game. It's just these are two different works based on the same story, made by two different people. They both did it their own way. Each project has its benefits and drawbacks. The ones in animated episodic series, that's 22 minute episodes, 20 episodes a season, ran 15 years ago. This one's a live action, different time, more CGI based, 8 episode, hour long, on a streaming service known for bingeable content. They're made for completely different eras of television in completely different styles. Like, even though the medium of TV didn't change, like, yeah, they're both still TV shows. They're completely different kinds of TV, going for completely different styles. Like, Netflix is all about the binge model, and the old Avatar was more, all right, let's show up for 20 weeks out of the year and see what the gang's up to. It's more bite-sized entertainment over a longer period. So and also, like, animation to live action. Live action is, it's more limited in so many ways. And it's always funny to me to compare it to quote-unquote live action, because you need to computer generate so much anyway. You're basically watching an animation anyway, just with real people sandwiched in there. But it's Uncanny Valley is the problem. In the animation, you have all that computer animation, but it's just the world. You kind of just take it for face value. So that's a drawback to adapting a lot of stuff into live action from animation. You have the one is just the world. It's your suspension of disbelief goes further because it's all unrealistic, as opposed to these things that are semi-realistic, with a lot of things you absolutely know aren't. So that's one example of a project I think that's, yeah, sure, you can do Avatar in live action, but it didn't need to be. In many ways, it's worse off for being in live action, but I'm not judging the show compared to the, I'm trying not to judge the show compared to the original. I'm just saying it's okay, that was a way to do the show, but it was made in animation because the original creator said this is the ideal medium to express this story. If they wanted to do it in live action at the time, well, they probably couldn't have because budgetary reasons and technology just weren't there 15 years ago when they did it. But I doubt they would have, even if they had the capability to do it live action back then, because it wasn't right for their story at the time. And now this one is for modern audiences. So, yeah. Point is, they're separate entities and treat them that way.
Yeah, I hear you. It's always tough when doing an adaptation, especially some that's so beloved as Avatar. And it's really hard for people to turn off their brain when it comes to like a different adaptation. Especially if it's like a visual medium with like shows that are kind of like The Witcher that is primarily adapted from the books, not so much the video games. It's kind of easier to kind of accept maybe some of the changes or,
The Witcher's really
little things here or there. Yeah, because like not a lot of people like read those books, and also with like Harry Potter as well, it's to see things visually come to life. You're like, oh, that's crazy. But with shows like Avatar, well, we've already seen this. We've already seen stuff like this.
Yeah,
and arguably, this is the only case is because since Avatar is so beloved and it's so great, we're probably never going to see it be that great again. So what's really the point? Something like that.
Yeah, actually, Avatar is a pretty good example because we've seen it as a movie as well.
Yeah. That was terrible.
Yeah. It's a good case study for, we've seen this same story play out over three different mediums. Or we've seen it play out in animation, on an animation TV show, a live action TV show, and a movie. And the movie sticks out like a sore thumb for multiple reasons, because while we already talked about the differences between animation and live action, but the movie is also trying to squish a TV format down into 2 hours or less. The live action show condensed a 20 plus episode season of TV down into an 8 hour show. Which, okay, if you blow up the time, sure, that's actually, that 8 hour show runs about the same length of time as the original season. Okay, I can buy that. But when you squish out an 8 hours worth of content into a 2 hour movie and try to make that into a satisfying arc, it doesn't work. Or it's very rare to work. You have to have a kind of movie that's only focusing on part of the story. And that's the funny thing is, I think M. Night Shyamalan was trying to do that. He didn't try to adapt all of Avatar. He was smart enough not to try to condense 3 seasons worth of material into one movie. But even doing 1 season in one movie was too much.
I don't even think that's possible.
Somebody out there would try. I remember, I didn't see these movies,
like each
but I
arc
I
would be
Percy
like
Jackson.
Him learning the elements.
Yeah. I didn't watch the second one. I did watch the first Percy Jackson movie, but I have heard it said that Percy Jackson Sea of Monsters wasn't even really an adaptation of that book. It was kind of the next 2 or 3 books they tried to squish into one movie.
Yikes.
Yeah. So it happens. It has happened where movies are like, they go out of their way to stuff them in. Or then you have ones like The Hobbit that are so desperate to make a trilogy that they finish the story in 2 movies, but because film, people expect trilogies. Okay, well, we just blew up the last 10 minutes of this novel into a whole 3-hour movie. You didn't even need necessarily whole movies to adapt that novel.
I'm pretty sure Bilbo was knocked out for the entire battle.
Yeah.
At the end of The Hobbit. So we don't know what happens.
Yeah. They end Desolation of Smaug with, like, I think I heard the first 10 minutes of Battle of the Five Armies cover the end of The Hobbit book, and the rest they just made up.
Yeah. Something like that.
So it's kind of funny. So sometimes you have movies that stretch out the source material and other ones that condense it way, condense a whole story way too tight. A good example Justin told me about recently was the 1980s Dune movie. That Dune is a really big book, right? With a whole lot of lore in it. And this 1980s movie, I don't remember how accurate he said it was. I think it was trying to be, though. But the thing about this movie was, okay, so let's compare it to Denis Villeneuve's Dune movie, right? So in Denis Villeneuve's Dune movie, they explore the Atreides homeworld a little bit in the first act, and then they get to Arrakis, and that's where most of the movie takes place, is Arrakis, because that's all the good stuff.
Can we talk about how the family's planet, what their name again? The Atreides planet. Atreides, looks like, yeah, looks like it was filmed on the same island as Luke's island in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
It looks the exact same.
Those Irish Isles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the book, that original planet was a way larger part of it. They go way further into the lore, explain the history of House Atreides and everything. And that's what the original 1980s movie tried to do, according to Justin. Half that movie is set on the Atreides homeworld. And then it's like they realized, oh crap, there's so much more of the story that we haven't gotten to yet. So then they get to Arrakis halfway through the movie, and then it just, the story, the back. So basically they covered like a third, like maybe a fifth of the book in half the movie. And then they tried to cover the last 4/5 of the book in half the movie. So even within the movie, they squished it way so tight. And that's why wild. The new adaptation was like, okay, we're chopping out basically all that beginning and just starting with the good stuff. Quote unquote good stuff. I'm offending Dune fans of the books. But yeah, adaptations have to make sacrifices to fit the medium. We've seen what happens when you try to squish all of one Dune book into a movie. Denis Villeneuve said, okay, I'm chopping a lot out, but I can fit it in two. I can make two movies out of this and do most of the story justice.
Is there not going to be a part three?
Part three is adapting Dune Messiah, which is the second book in the series.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mm. Yeah. So Dune Part 1 and 2 were
just the first book. For some reason, I thought the first book was three movies. I don't know. I also did no research, so.
Yeah, Dune Part 1 and 2 were just the first book, and then Dune 3 will be the second book.
Watch our review for that. Comes out at this time of recording a few days from now, so. We'll be talking about it.
Yeah, we're
make sure our eardrums are safe, though. Because I heard when it came out in IMAX, the first movie, it was so loud. Like, people said it was, like, insanely loud.
I've heard good things, though.
Yeah. I mean, Scott, they somehow added more onto their star-studded cast from the first movie, which I don't know how they did that. But then also it's Denis Villeneuve, so. He's a great director, but I also feel like he's underutilized in Hollywood at the same time.
I'm okay with that. Like, he
doesn't
do
that much.
He's made some of my favorite movies of the last decade because he hasn't gotten so much control over him.
Mm-hmm. If no one's seen Prisoners, go watch it. It's great.
I love Prisoners, Arrival, Dune.
Oof.
So I haven't seen Blade Runner.
It's really good.
He's
so
done
much
a lot
better
of,
than the original.
I really do not like the original Blade Runner. There, I good. Said it. Controversy.
There. We agree on that. It's not good. The only good thing is the ending monologue. But at the end, like, Decker is a rapist. All right? Let's just get out there and say it.
Okay.
Anyway, adaptations.
Yeah, so basically, any medium that's longer form content, like books or TV shows, very much frequently a disaster if they have to be condensed into shorter forms. Longer form basically always has to go to long form.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. They have to.
Unless you want to lose, like I said, you can do parts. If you want to take a section of a longer form story and make a shorter movie out of it, that's fine. Like going back to Lord of the Rings, I think Peter Jackson did a good job of making every movie stand alone. Like Fellowship of the Ring, Two Towers, and Return of the King, they all tell complete stories, even though they are all based on one book. He managed to segment them in a way that, all right, yeah, I can buy all these as three separate movies, and they all have their own payoffs. They're
three different books.
No, it's all one book. They just split it.
The Lord of the Rings?
Is one book. They just split it into three.
There are three separate books. No. There's the Fellowship of the Ring. There's Two Towers. Look it up.
No. No, 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 you'll see the set.
I think you're thinking about The Hobbit.
No, The Hobbit's one book. Lord of the Rings is one book that's often split into three different parts. It was written as one. So they sell them
as like three separate books then?
Oftentimes, yes.
Huh.
There's three books. There's really only three books. There's The Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, and The Silmarillion. But the books are so big, they just split them up. The Lord of the Rings book is so big, they split it into three parts, which, once again, you can do. That's the point. The story is kind of structured such that you can split it up that way. But it can also be one thing. So even the books have kind of done that in their release. It was written as one, it was originally released as one, and then they split it up, and the movies can take advantage of that, too.
I don't believe you. Hold on. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So another difference, I think, between books and movies is that books have so much internal dialogue. Like, you have to adapt things different ways. Like, books communicate very wordy. You have to describe the sights and sounds and scenery of a place, or characters' internal monologues. How do they think and feel about every situation around them? Whereas in movies, you can trim away a lot of that fat just by virtue of seeing it on screen. Actors' faces can tell you those internal monologues books take pages to describe. Seeing the sets and characters' reactions to them, it says a picture's worth a thousand words, as the old saying goes. And you do see that pronounced difference between movies and books. Just the visual medium describes a lot just in a still image, or comic books as well. But that's the difference. Those lengthy descriptions all add up. Like, it's, they're trying to do different things. Those lengthy descriptions are for people who get more out of the world in words. Some people get more out of the world in visual as well. I know multiple people in my life who can't visualize when they read. Some people, like me, I read and I imagine the events on the page playing out like a movie in my head. I see the images in my mind. And lots of people can't do that. They get nothing out of books. They just see the words on the page. And it's boring. And I never realized people thought this way. I never realized other people couldn't see the images in their mind, and they didn't realize, what do you mean you see images in your mind when you read the words? So there is this kind of disconnect. So different mediums are good for different people. Like, I had trouble processing auditory information. That's a hang up I discovered about myself in the last couple of years. Like, some people, that's my problem with, like, auditory, like people have with those books, right? Like, you read the words, you can't see the picture in your mind. I hear people talking, I picture the wrong thing in my mind. If what you're describing isn't what I see in my mind, I misunderstand you. I get it wrong. You're like, oh, go get this thing for me. And the way you described it is different than I saw it, and I'll come back with the wrong thing. So that's how my mind works. And I'm trying to train myself to change how I process auditory information, try to understand it better. I do listen to a lot of audio dramas, but for me, visual, like, okay, here's a clear picture. This is the thing. Okay. But those more interpretive media or comic books. So, like, movies, I love. Comic books, I love. But more interpretive media, like audio dramas or books, I'll imagine different things than other people. And that can lead to good discussions. That could also lead to more arguments. But it's more... But those mediums are also really interesting because everyone pictures things differently. Everybody gets their own different experience out of them. Whereas stuff like comic books or video games or movies is more... Everyone experiences them collectively. We're all seeing the same stuff. So... That's the beauty of changing different mediums. And that's why I respect adaptations of things, because how I experience the story in one medium, well, other people should be allowed to experience that in a medium of their preference too. If you're like me and auditory isn't necessarily the best and there's an only audio story, well... Okay, well, maybe somebody deserves to see that. Or if you're reading a book and you can't process that, well, maybe you deserve to see that in a movie. That's why more people see movies than read.
Yeah, I respect the book to visual aid adaptation.
Yeah.
Because then you're giving a wider audience a chance to see that work. Especially yeah. Stuff of like Dune, Game of Thrones, which was from Song of Fire and Ice. Yeah. I am very wary on when it's like visual to visual media, like that sort of adaptation. Because mm-hmm. then it's like, okay, we've already seen this in somewhere that was probably way better. And the big example I'm going to give is the Halo TV show. Mm-hmm. I am an uber fan of Halo. I've played all the games. It's near and dear to my heart. I grew up with it. I own a helmet, as previously shown. Mm-hmm. I watched 2 episodes of the Halo TV show, and I could not continue. There was so much... The production design's great. Everything about visually, it looks great. But the storytelling's god-awful. The way they treat Master Chief is awful. Now he just takes his helmet off every time. Like, there's so much just butchering of it. It feels like... Someone wrote a sci-fi show, but didn't have the budget to make the show. And then Paramount bought the rights for a Halo TV show. And they just inserted the script into that world. That's really what it feels like. And it's really sad. Showrun has even admitted that they never played one of the Halo games and didn't care to. So that goes a lot into just how much, like... Like, that's terrible marketing at first, being like, oh, we never played the Halo games.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, like, why would I care now? Why do I care that season 2 came out last month? Didn't even check it. You're changing so much fundamentally about this, about Halo, that's just not even Halo anymore. And you can do video game to TV show well, like The Last of Us did it perfectly. Yep. They're able to do that.
What I think was brilliant about The Last of Us was that in the medium of a video game, you're generally restricted to one point of view. And in this case, it was Joel. You play as Joel the entire time. You're seeing the apocalypse through his eyes, meeting everybody from his point of view. And in the show, Joel and Ellie were more the conduits where that passed through this world, where every episode was from somebody else's vantage point. Every episode focused on a different character and their unique struggles that Joel and Ellie just happened to pass by for that episode. And it definitely changes my perspective. Like the very last episode with the hospital, playing through the hospital as Joel is a very different experience than watching Joel in the hospital in the show. Seeing the same events play out with an objective point of view completely changes how I feel about it. And that's the brilliance of it. You're
personally,
taking
I felt
me
the
out.
Same.
Yeah, you're taking me out. Two different mediums showed me two completely different ways of how to feel about the same situation, just from their presentation of it. The show.
Well, that's what makes
the
Last of Us like a good adaptation over Halo, is because they took the original content, did it, but expanded on it. They expanded on the lore, they expanded on the world, expanded on side characters. Whereas with Halo, they just recreated everything. They just did, we're going to do our own thing. That's not what you do. You don't recreate anything. You expand. That's what adaptation is supposed to be. That's why people hate the Witcher show. That's why people hate the Halo show. I understand why people hate the Witcher show now, because I've watched two episodes of Halo, of how much they've fundamentally changed and all the rumors I've heard about the Witcher show. It's just, it really just goes to show you don't care about your core audience. You don't care. Like, so who is this for? Is it for people who, like, just a wide array of streaming audience who don't really care about Halo?
Yeah.
But also you have, like, a strong core audience that love Halo, but you're not really doing that, and you're just kind of shitting on the thing that they've loved for over a decade. But with The Last of Us, they went on to respect the original content and then expand more, so it gave you a reason to watch that show week to week.
Yeah, I agree. It's like I was saying, though, it's hard to compare and contrast different these different adaptations, because audiences are coming at them all very differently. Like you're hating on the Halo show, but my boss was just telling me the other day how he watched the pilot and he thought it was decent. He's going to keep going on it. I don't think he's got that much emotional investment in Halo, but he's just, okay, this is a show, I'm going to watch it. And then they're like me with
Has
The Witcher.
Has he played Halo?
Yeah.
Has he played Halo?
I don't think so. Even though he was an Xbox guy.
There you go.
I know, but that's my point. He's watching the show, and to him, it's just a show. To you, they're ruining it. To him, he doesn't care. Something like The Witcher, people might have played The Witcher, read The Witcher books, or played The Witcher video game. I watch The Witcher, and I like it as a TV show. I enjoy the show, and I hear all this hate from the video game fans, from the book fans, and I don't care, because this is the only version I've ever known, and I think it's fine for what it is. I'm not coming in with other biases. But now, the video game's probably the next thing I'll play, and I'll be comparing that to the show. I'll be like, oh, it's not like the show. This is the version of The Witcher I know. That's what I came in with.
I think that's the main problem, though. It's like, when you're coming in, you're like, oh, it's just okay. Like, that's the mindset of it. You don't have these biases coming in and be like, oh, this is terrible. But you're seeing it as itself, and you're saying, oh, it's just okay. But you're not saying they're great, because they're not great.
Yeah.
They're just shitty, basic, mediocre, like, television storylines. If they fundamentally changed the character but made the storyline actually good, then I wouldn't be as controversial. But since it's like just okay, and you're dumbing down great characters from video games and books, of course it's going to get people pissed off.
Well, it dilutes the franchise because you get the people who say, well, okay, there is a great version of this story out there. It's just not the most popular one somehow. And The Witcher is a weird one like that because more people have played the video game and seen the show than have read the books.
Yeah.
Even though those
I didn't even know there were books.
Yeah. Even though those are probably the best version of the Witcher story. That is the story. That's what everything is drawing from. Not to say other adaptations can't be great. I hear so many great things about The Witcher 3. I don't think book fans are super thrilled about The Witcher 3, though. People just like that because it's a good game. You hear complaints?
From what I hear, the games are not an adaptation of the books, but like a
sequel.
Expand like a sequel story to the books. So I'm
just
not
saying, whatever
entirely
they,
sure.
I'm just saying, whatever they do, the book fans aren't going to be satisfied.
It's, well, book fans are never happy. So,
but people who played the game didn't. A lot of people who played the game didn't care about the books. They're discovering it as its own thing, and it's a thing they like. Same with the show. Just like a lot of people will find Netflix's The Last Airbender and somehow not realize it was an adaptation. Somehow. So here's another example, right? Like, a lot of things were based on, like, books, right? Like Jurassic Park or Jaws or even The Godfather, The Shining, Game of Thrones. Those are just some examples of, I think, media that superseded their source material. People don't think of things like The Godfather as a novel by Mario Puzo. They think of the movie.
Yeah.
It's a great adaptation. It's so good, it was even better than the book. That's what people remember it for. So that's an example where the original wasn't the best version of it. But it can happen where in adaptations in the public consciousness, that's it. That's what the majority of people have seen. Therefore, this is the story. So it's very hard to overcome that general bias once it seeps into the public consciousness of, well, this is the version of the story everybody knows. So it's hard to convince people there's a better version out there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to do that. It's also kind of like another thing, too, when you're doing an adaptation and the adaptation doesn't suit well with... The reason why it doesn't also suit well with the original fans is because if it's the first time they're doing that adaptation, they're like, okay, so this is the definitive live action version of this world.
Yeah.
Like kind of with The Witcher, the video games don't count. Halo has always tried to get like a movie or a TV show done. And so like, okay, finally, this is it. The definitive version that everybody can enjoy. And then it's garbage. It's not great. So that's really what I feel personally, that like Hollywood is sending the message out on. Like, this is the definitive version that everybody can watch because it's so much easier for everybody to watch a TV show or watch a movie than it is for everybody to read one book together or to play one video game story together. And when you don't do it correctly, people are going to be pissed.
It's also funny how different parts of adaptations can be considered definitive. Like, I'll use Superman as an example. When I watch the Superman movies, to me, Christopher Reeve is the definitive Superman. He's the best adaptation of that character I've seen. I haven't seen Smallville, but I've been going down a rabbit hole of Smallville content lately. I'm definitely going to watch the show at some point. But in all the comment sections, you see everyone laud Michael Rosenbaum as the best Lex Luthor ever. So that's very interesting to me, where you can have these movies from 40 years ago and you can say, okay, Christopher Reeve, easily the best adaptation of Superman. And you can have Smallville, this TV show from 20 years ago, and say that's the best version of Lex Luthor. Outside the comic books. or even Batman.
Right.
Kevin Conroy is the best version of Batman across all mediums, video games and or across video games and animation or animated movies. Just any time there hasn't been a live action version, that's the gold standard outside of the comic books. Batman the Animated Series is considered the best version of Batman that's not in the comic books. Some would say even better than the comics because it's more consistent. It's got a timeline. The comics just go on forever. They inspired it, but some things are better. Like Batman the Animated Series basically invented Mr. Freeze as the concept we know today. Or in Harley Quinn. Those things weren't in the comic books. That's something an adaptation did and improved on the source material.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny how sometimes adaptations can be considered the definitive versions in the public consciousness, even across decades and different iterations of them.
Yeah. I feel like, especially our generation with the Harry Potter movies, there's a lot of people who haven't read the books and feel like the live action is so definitive because of like the 11-year span of when they were coming out, even though they knew about the books. And that's why they're so, I think a lot of people are hesitant or also kind of against like the HBO show that's going to come out in a year or so.
I had the same gut reaction and I'm like, but why? why can't it ever be
done again?
We've
already done this.
Well, besides the fact that we did it once and it was good, why am I complaining about it being done again? Besides the fact it's unoriginal. Like, why shouldn't it get another shot? Why should these movies be the only version to ever exist? Give a TV show a shot. See how that does. Maybe they'll get some other things right. It's a different... You said it's a show, right? Not just movies?
Yeah, it's a show.
Sure, why not? We've seen Harry Potter movies. Let's see what a TV show can do. It's a different medium. Mm-hmm. It's got a different shot to expand the world and or the characters. Maybe include characters who weren't in the books or didn't feature as prominently in the movies. I know a lot of Harry Potter fans complain that characters got shortchanged in those movies. Yeah. The TV show will give them a chance to shine in a way they couldn't
for
before.
Sure. I'm not as mad about it as I was when they first announced it because it literally happened like over a decade ago, like the end of those movies. So just doing like a readaptation is just kind of like, ugh, whatever. And I wish they did something like they announced like they did the Marauders prequel or they expanded on, you know, Death Eaters or Snape. They expand on something else, but they could still do that with the show. And also it's HBO and I trust them. Yeah. So they rarely miss.
Yeah. So. Well, see, that's another issue that we're bringing up here kind of under the surface is fandom gatekeeping different adaptations. Why we got Harry Potter movies when we were growing up, and now we're gatekeeping this HBO TV show. And other generations have done that to us too. We'll say like, I don't know, growing up, we'll say even like Christopher Reeve again, just because it's top of mind, older generations say, yep, you're the definitive Superman. I'm not even giving Henry Cavill a chance. And to us, those are the movies that were coming out when we were going to the movies. So yeah, Henry Cavill's our generation Superman. Okay, here's a better example is like James Bond. To certain generations, it's like, no, it'll always be Sean Connery. Sean Connery is the only one. And then there's someone like my mom, like, okay, yeah, she grew up when Roger Moore was Bond. Roger Moore is her Bond. For us, it's Daniel Craig. Like, yeah, Daniel Craig was the Bond when we were growing up. I saw his story from Casino Royale to No Time to Die. I saw that story play out over 15 years in real time. So Daniel Craig will always have a special place in my heart. I'm not going to gatekeep the next Bond. I'll try not to. But it's just kind of inevitable. This is the version I know. This is what I grew up with. So how could anything else top it?
Yeah. I think it's just like it's nostalgia and then it's just a personal connection to like holding on to that youth and just the the recognition of it or the, you know, just like you have such a connection to it. Like I have such a connection to the Harry Potter movies because they happened every year when I was growing up. It was such like a family event to go see every time. So yeah. It's like it is pretty near and dear to my heart, but fucking a whole show they could do with the whole book in one season. And that's probably what they're going to do. Like 7 seasons, 7 books.
Yep.
They could probably nail it. It's HBO.
Or other things like, okay.
I'd be worried if it was Prime Video.
Yeah. Or something like Doctor Who, right? It's been going on for 60 years. And why should I, as a fan, have to have seen all of it? There's like, you can pick your favorite Doctor. You can even pick, okay, do you prefer Classic Who or New Who? And it's one of those things where it's okay, you can the people who like the new seasons, the newest Doctors, the newest seasons, why is our stuff looked down on compared to the stuff from the last 60 years? Just because you got out of the show doesn't mean you left it at its peak. I mean, you probably did, but that's just kind of that mindset of, oh, like when it was on in my era, it was the best one. There's you lose a sense of objectivity.
It's like a pride thing too, I feel like, with some people.
Yeah.
Especially with like Star Wars, is like the original trilogy fans, they're like, this is the best Star Wars, and it is. And it's the best Star Wars, everything else is crap. And then now with all the prequel fans growing up, they're like, prequels are so much better, blah, blah, blah. Or the prequels are just as good as the originals. Sequels are terrible. I'm telling you, in the next 10, 20 years, the people who grew up with the sequel trilogy will be defending sequels.
And hating for the number end of time. 10, 9, 10, and 11. 10,
yeah,
11,
or even shitting on originals or the prequels because they grew up with it. It's something, it's just this attachment and the fan gatekeeping is just like, they feel like they have a right to defend it. And some cases they do.
Except, as you were saying, to me, the exception is when the adaptation of the thing they liked always sucked. When fandoms even right from the beginning said, no, this is the only thing we have, but it's still bad. Can we all agree on that? Yes. Mm-hmm. And they wait with bated breath for an actual good version of the thing they liked. In that case, the gatekeeping kind of goes away. Somewhat. Because then we can then the old fans and the new fans come together and say, okay, new fans like it because it's the only thing they've ever known. And old fans say, finally, we got a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Very fun time. Yeah. It's also when people were, I was thinking of adaptations and I saw my shelf of the Killing Joke. Adaptation, like it's a very short comic. And like the real actual Killing Joke was only like 45 minutes. So they attached on this like 30 minute section of Batgirl. And it's so garbage. That's like, what was the point of doing that? Or they could have done something decent with Batgirl that wasn't that. They gave it a little bit more time with. So it's like weird stuff too when they adapt something and they try to expand it. But they just do it horribly. That's really the only thing I can think of because the Killing Joke was such a short comic book. That like, to be a full movie, it's kind of tough to do. I can't really think of anything else where they like had to expand it because of how short the content was.
Yeah. Well, except we mentioned The Hobbit earlier. That was
that one. Yeah. That well, they didn't have to, but that was kind of a studio forcing Peter Jackson to do it. But yeah.
Yeah. I think another pitfall of adaptations is kind of going back to the halo of it all. Different creative voices who don't understand the works they're adapting.
Yeah.
They
or don't care. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, or don't care. kind of merging the last point I talked about where different generations have their different the different things that they grew up with and maybe didn't hit the mark. I kind of think of the original X-Men movies from 20 years ago where Bryan Singer famously on set banned the comic books. He said, nobody gets to read them. We're doing this movie my way. And nobody read the source material. Don't let that influence you. And the actors did sneak the comic books to each other between takes. They did they did their own research behind his back. But you had this guy on site who was, no, don't look into it. We're doing an adaptation this way. And then later, I think the X-Men franchise got better later on. You look at those original ones where they make fun of the idea of, like, what did you expect? Yellow spandex? And then my 10 years later in First Class, we get the yellow spandex. They embrace their source material more over time. But this is also the era where you get the Merc with the mouth, whose mouth gets sewed shut. And he's got, like, Cyclops laser eyes. And sword hands for some reason. I don't think any Deadpool fan. Yeah. I don't think any Deadpool fan was upset when Ryan Reynolds got a solo movie that looked actually like Deadpool.
Yeah. Well, he had to leak it. The studio didn't want to do it. And then he had to leak that, like, first 15 minutes or something. And then they fucking crowd reaction actually got the studio to be like, okay, we'll fund this movie.
Yeah. And after 20 years in Deadpool and Wolverine, we get to see Hugh Jackman in yellow spandex. It's a long time coming.
I hope he's good.
Yeah. But this is the kind of thing some fans have been waiting for since 2000. Some people, all they wanted was to see Logan in yellow spandex. Haven't got it in 20 years. So.
Yeah, they've teased it so many times, but they haven't actually done it yet until this Deadpool movie.
Yeah, but I think
they even gave him his helmet in The Wolverine, but he never
wore
it.
Yeah. I just think Deadpool is a perfect example to me of how badly could you mess that up? Like, how did that happen? You just made somebody who was, like, and such a popular character, too. Deadpool's never really been a nobody. How did you botch it that miserably? Oh, speaking of Marvel, too, I also think of Venom.
Because I think it's a lot of when a certain director or writer is hired on to do a project and they hear like the fundamentals of what a character is, but they want to have their own shot at it. And I feel like it's because it's an ego boost. And people can hate for me for saying that all it is, but that's all Hollywood is just to boost your ego and to boost 100%. Your work and pride. So it's very much what happened. I feel like with Deadpool, same thing with Venom, same thing with the Halo guys.
Yeah,
probably Venom, the same thing. You could probably argue the same thing with Rian Johnson. So
100%. The only thing I'll give Rian Johnson is that a lot of people seem to like his vision. It's not what I would have done. It's not what I wanted to see at all. But I understand why he got there. But I think with someone like the character of Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill's famously called him out. Like, well, I fundamentally disagree on the direction he took for this character. And I and a lot of other fans agree with that sentiment. Yeah, it's a version of the story. Like, yeah, okay, you took Luke Skywalker in that direction, but it felt at odds with the character previously set up.
Felt like you were trying to make people upset, which is never a good thing.
You're going out of your way to generate controversy just for the sake of getting people to talk. It doesn't really further the story. It's like, okay, fine. The sequels, you could argue, are an adaptation of the original trilogy. I think that's often an argument, is that sequels are kind of an adaptation. But that's not really the kind of adaptation we're talking about. We're talking more about repeated works of art instead of continuations of them. But yeah, Luke Skywalker was a failure, too. But the character, I think, you can argue is more of an adaptation, because Luke Skywalker as a character existed. George Lucas's version, Mark Hamill's version, and then Rian Johnson did his version of it. And it feels so removed from that other version of him that it all depends on your suspension of disbelief. Will you believe this original character ended up that way? Many people can roll with it. I can't. And that's where it falls apart.
I can't believe it because R2-D2 is there with him and they're buddies. And I don't think R2-D2 would let Luke be depressed. He's too cute.
Yeah. Yeah. But the point is there's so many creatives who don't understand the works they're adapting. I'll go back to Venom because I know Sam Raimi famously never cared about Venom.
He hates
the studio. Yeah, the studio forced him to use Venom. Sam Raimi grew up in a time where Spider-Man villains were more of the Silver Age villains. Green Goblin, Doc Ock, guys like that. Created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, the originals. Venom is a creation of like the anti-hero late 80s and 90s when Marvel started getting edgy to appeal to newer audiences. Sam Raimi had long grown out of Spider-Man comics by that point. He never cared for that new wave. He didn't know anything about Venom. He didn't.
The Rock era.
Yeah. He didn't have a connection to the character. Yeah. The whole black suit Spider-Man era was long after he was out of all that. So to shoehorn in Venom, it's like, okay, well, yeah, Sam Raimi is. He totally understood Spider-Man as a character. He knew who Peter Parker was. He knew who characters like Norman Osborn or Otto Octavius were. He understood them at a core level. He didn't know or care to understand Eddie Brock. And you can tell in a franchise where so much love and care is put into adapting most of the characters, you can tell he did not care about this one or really had no clue where to take it.
Yeah. And I think if you're a creative, if you don't care about adapting something, then just don't do it because you're not going to try and the audience is going to see you're not going to try. And like, especially with Sam Raimi and the Venom situation, you can do Venom right if you're going to adapt him to be something different. I mean, hell, the Insomniac games did it right. And it wasn't even Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
They adapted Venom completely. It was a completely different vessel for Venom. And he was almost perfect. It's insane how well they did. I 100% believed it was Venom. Fucking did it way better than the Tom Hardy movies. I'll say that. The, like, very popular Sony-led Venom movies. Like, it's insane. When you have people who... That's what producers need to do. They need to hire people who actually fundamentally care about this type of stuff, or just like hire the original creators like Neil Druckmann, like or stuff like that. It's just stuff like freaking Dave Filoni is the godson of George Lucas. He loves Star Wars. He created arguably some of the best Star Wars content out there with the Clone Wars, Rebels, some of the live action shows. One of the most popular characters for newer fans is Ahsoka. It's a creation by George Lucas and Dave Filoni, but very Dave Filoni led. So it's just kind of like, this is how you do it.
I think another problem with adaptations is, speaking of the main creative voices, is think about a book, right? You might have some publishers telling you, oh, do this or do that. You can tighten things up here. You have some input. But books, in large part, are the creation of one mind. Everything flows from the brain to the page. It's a singular vision and voice. And then take a book and turn it into a movie. How many voices do you have? You have all the suits and the money people telling you, oh, you got to throw in these product placements and do this and that. This is how we make money. This is the kind of person you should cast. Oh, well, like they were like super ugly in the books. I don't care. Hire the most attractive actor you can find. Yeah. Like, but the ugliness was sort of the point. Don't care. Won't sell tickets.
I don't care.
the directors who might understand and interpret the book completely differently than anybody else. Because like I said, you're adapt earlier that books are a medium up open for interpretation. So now this one voice interprets the book differently. And not just this one voice, but then you have every actor on set too, each of them playing another character, and they're all interpreting each character differently, maybe even different than the director seeing it, or everyone in the audience will have seen it, especially if they read the book. And so that you can have three different visions competing for attention for the same character, the audience member, the director, the actor. Everyone's got a different vision, and the author may have even had a different vision than what anyone actually interpreted.
Yeah, exactly. It's so tough because you're going, like, it's what probably sucks about like screenwriter movie meetings and like the writer's room, because there's so many different visions and so many different voices to speak out. And do you really want to, there's even some points like maybe you should go with the general consensus, but if you go with the general consensus, is that too expected? And I think some people just want to branch out a little bit, but also like leave hint. It's so tough. Like,
yeah, I mean, we'll say
I'm not going to say like, oh, like, I don't think most adaptations try to do something.
Yeah.
But not a lot of them have succeeded. I would never be like, they adapted that and they didn't even try.
Yeah.
Maybe with the live action Avatar movie, but that's different.
All right, so here's an example of somebody who nailed it. I'm still thinking about Spider-Man, so I'll say J.K. Simmons is J. Jonah Jameson. Sam Raimi, J.K. Yeah. Simmons, audience members alike. Nobody thinks that was a bad job. Everyone unanimously agrees, nope, that's the character we all picture the same way, just about.
His performance in that trilogy has shaped the way he's portrayed through media since then. In TV shows and video games and other adaptations, even in the new movies, it's still J.K. Simmons because of how iconic that performance is.
It can happen where everyone actually does agree that, this is basically how we all imagined it. Good job. It's rare.
Yeah. A clip popped up recently when I was doom scrolling of Spider-Man 3 where he's like taking the pills and he's got that buzzer that like interrupts him and it like freaks him out a little bit. It's kind of a niche scene.
Yeah.
Funny. Go check our Defend Spider-Man 3 episode. It was fun.
Yeah. That was a good one. All right. Well, that's about all I've got to say on adaptations. That's just what we're trying to communicate today is every medium carries with it benefits and drawbacks, and it's all about finding the main spirit of the work, getting passed on, but good luck getting anybody to agree on what that is. Yeah,
exactly.
I think the only way to be satisfied with every adaptation is just start with one.
Yeah.
It's like you said, whatever you start with, that's probably the thing you're going to gravitate the most towards. That's whether it's the best, the worst, or the most mediocre. That's what's setting your expectations for everything else. So just be when you're starting people with franchises, just make sure to start them with the ones people generally consider to be the best. Don't start them with the bad or the most mediocre ones.
Like
the
Snyder Cut, like the Snyderverse.
Snyderverse is not how I'd introduce people to DC.
What do you mean?
If you're wondering, the best adaptation of DC is the DC animated universe from the 2000s and 90s, starting with Batman the Animated Series and going through, I think Justice League Unlimited was the end of it. It may have kept going. So from like DC, anything DC animated from like 1992 to 2004, that's the best adaptation of DC. Not the Snyderverse. Other movies.
For DC, for video game fans, I would introduce him with Injustice, not because of bad Superman, but because when they introduce good Superman to fight bad Superman, that is the also the definitive Superman from like the animated show as well. So
yeah,
there's that.
If we're talking someone like Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi movies, those are the definitive adaptations in my mind, or Spider-Verse. It's either the Sam Raimi movies or into the
Spider-Verse. I would say right now maybe the Insomniac universe, but even Peter Parker is a little bit older than he is in like high school. But yeah, when is the new Game Plus coming out? I gotta. I'm still waiting on Spider-Man 2 new Game Plus.
Yeah, so those are just some examples.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the original is what you want. The very first thing to ever come out. That's what started it all off. That's what's popular enough to make people want to adapt it into different mediums. So yeah, you can start with the best thing, or like I said, you can start with the thing that appeals most to you. Maybe you don't like movies, but you like comic books. Okay, there's probably a comic book adaptation, or you like the books, or the audio dramas, or the video game. Although I generally like to stay away from tie-in video games. Traditionally, not good. Anyway, point is...
unless it's the Wolverine game.
Yeah. Point is, the best balance to strive for is either just watch the original work in its original medium, or pick an adaptation of the work in your favorite medium. However you best experience stories, and that's probably the way you'll best enjoy it.
Agreed.
That's all I've got for today. We have a question of the week.
Yeah, I kind of have two, but they kind of meld together into one. Let's do like it. Your Lord of the Rings bullshit. I'm just kidding. what's an adaptation that you are wishing that they would adapt into a visual media or whatever? And is there an adaptation that's been announced that you're very worried about? Or like kind of like, ooh, I don't know if that's going to work.
Okay. Sorry, the first question was...
what's an adaptation that you are waiting to see get adapt to, like,
that I'm waiting for? I'm still very... I mean, I know it's been done before, but I've heard HBO has been working on a Green Lantern show for a very long time. I've been very hyped about that project
Space
for
Cops.
A while. Yeah. Green Lantern show can be incredible if you do it right. What am I worried about? Basically anything Marvel related in the near future.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, Deadpool looks decent, but one thing I'm waiting for them to adapt is kind of is the Bone series. It's a comic book series. I'm waiting for them to do like an animation series on that. Netflix had bought the rights for it a couple years ago, but then dropped it recently. So that kind of sucks. Also, Mistborn, that trilogy. Brandon Sanderson, he's got this. It's like a mixture of magic, but also physics as well. When different people can control different types of metal and they can either push or pull different types of metal, or there's the Mistborn, who's basically the avatar of the world, but there's multiple Mistborn who can just do everything. And I think visually, he describes it very well in the book, where you can't just picture it like a movie. That's the book that reminded me when you were talking about like when you read a book and you can visualize it. He does it very well. And one that I'm very worried about is probably Amazon Prime's God of War that they announced. Because, it's a very cinematic story. Like the Greek trilogy and the Norse saga as well.
Yeah.
It all depends who they cast. I mean, that really is it. I think they can just do Christopher Judge if they're doing the Norse saga. Or if they cast someone like a little bit younger to do the Greek stuff first. It's just tough because there's the action element as well. I'm always worried about like video game to a TV show or movie, because so much of video game is the action, and how do you hold on to people's attention span?
I don't think that video game movies work.
No.
It's like I said, long form. A la Prince of Persia. Long form.
Not good. Don't do it. Yeah, I mean, I'm like somewhat excited for it, but also very worried for it because of how close God of War is to my heart. So there's that.
Yeah. Okay. So where can we find you?
Probably my house, but like, don't go there. I'm probably sleeping. No, I'm just kidding. Ryan Walker Official on YouTube, TikTok, and on Instagram.
And you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at Thought Plane Media. Also, check out the Close Up with Ryan and Joe Facebook page for latest updates on the show. If you listen to us in audio, check out our YouTube channel. And if you're on YouTube, find us anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. See how we adapt them for different audiences. We hope to see you on the next Close Up with Ryan and Joe, where we'll probably talk about Dune Part 2. Probably.
Probably.
We'll see. Till next time.
Take care.